here we go. 11:06, coming around the bend and taking the old wooden wagon back to the barn, Tom, after spreading 2 hours of manure. Whoa, am I tired? I've decided to name the horse that gets up next to you. Patrick. That's right. Patrick is going to be the horse. He's going to be right beside you.
Huh? He'll never leave the show.
Johnny whip me if you think I deserve it, Andrew. By the way, Patrick is gone. And I always hated in television where you'd have a, I remember when I worked with his one market, this guy had been there for like 22 years. Yeah, he used to drink a lot and grab all the interns by the rear end. But the thing was, after a while, they eventually fired him. But he'd been on the air for 22 years. So one day, coming up on the weather, I turned and said, can you believe Don's not here anymore? Isn't that crazy? Don's, can you believe that? Just doesn't feel... And immediately in my ear, stop talking about Don. I was like, what? He would act like he never existed?
That's right.
Same sort of thing. So in tribute to the fact that Patrick had been our producer for what,
Seven years,
something like that. He will live on. I hate the fact that people are with it, and then just like, and he just
That's
goes
right.
on. He has, by the way, if you're tuning into the show for today, you missed it yesterday, Patrick, our producer, has decided to go on to a career as a police a policeman in the city of Seattle, which I think is remarkable because he was a rule follower, which I hated about him. Because I'm like, hey, let's run the tape. He goes, I can't run the tape. I said, why not? Because if we run it, we're not allowed to run it. I said, just do it anyway. Who's going to care? Well, you can't do that because we're not allowed to do that. And I'm like, just run it. Play it. And he'd be fighting me on all this sort of stuff.
Good for him.
As a rule follower. And I think you want a police officer that's a rule follower.
Yes. And he has a great temperament, too.
Yes, he does.
Yeah. He doesn't take the bait easily.
Nothing fazed him. All right. Andrew, filling in until we get somebody willing to work for under $25,000 a year. How does Washington rank when it comes to other states as far as talkativeness and politeness and more, Tom? Normally, we try to stay away from stories that are just nothing more than lists, but we thought as talkative people, we could certainly relate to this one.
That's right. Well, first off, they tell us that patience is really low in the Pacific Northwest. Hmm. That two of the most impatient states in the country are Washington and Oregon.
Ah.
And you know how they determine that?
No.
How long we hold on a phone when we're put on hold.
Ah.
That's how they determine. And we are one of the quickest ones to just drop off the face of the call in Washington, Oregon. We just can't stand that. So that's just like, we just don't do it. By the way, the most... Want to guess what area? We want to guess states. Guess what area of the country is the most patient? Again, in terms of the calls,
I'd go Midwest.
Midwest and Northeasterners, which kind of surprised me.
Huh.
Vermont, Delaware, Michigan, Minnesota, New Hampshire, and New York. So anyway, we're impatient on that score. Now,
I poke a small hole in that?
Poke a big
just
hole
says
in
this.
It, John.
Here's what I think.
This is based on by the work of a speech analytics provider called Marche. Released a,
I'd say Mr. Marche.
Yes.
Here's my problem with that. You're going to get, let's say, Washington and Oregon. So let's take the majority of the population. Let's take Seattle and Portland area because that's probably where most people are. People are like, get on the phone. Mm-hmm. You're on the phone for a couple. You know, screw this. I'm going to get online. So they go to get online. People in New Hampshire don't even have the internet yet. So here we are.
I see.
We get off, right? Mr. Marche, you got to give me that.
Yeah.
People in Seattle and Portland just simply hang up the phone and find the information they want on their own.
Okay.
Moving on. Next
round. Now, most talkative or less talkative? Are we Washingtonians? Do we tend to talk more or less?
I'd say less.
Yes. We're less talkative. People that talk the most, for some reason, this doesn't surprise me.
Minnesota?
Wyoming, Montana, North Dakota, Vermont, and Maine are the most talkative.
Yeah.
Because I figure there's nothing to do, so you might as well chit-chat with your neighbor.
Right.
You know, for hours on end. And guess who are the least talkative? Not Washingtonians. The least talkative.
New York?
New York.
Yeah.
Which, to me, I think of Jabbertown, New York. I mean, I think everybody's talkative. But in terms of phone conversations, at least, they are the least talkative. And then Washingtonians curse less and say please and thank you more than most. Mm-hmm. Washington's just below the middle of the pack. It's curse rate. We're number 30. And if you want to know what the top curse words are in America... The first one starts with an S, the second one starts with an A, the third one starts with an F, and the fourth one starts with a B.
Three of my favorites. I don't use the B one much. Do you use the B much?
I don't use the A one much.
Really?
Yeah. That's the one that's kind of surprised me.
Yeah.
And by the way, cursing doubles as the day proceeds.
Yes.
So by 6 o'clock, you're cursing twice as much as you did at 10.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that's about as all, that's all that we can squeeze out of that.
Got it. Good. Moving on. How about the fact that gig workers should, or people are saying, they deserve minimum wage? And the way a gig works is, let's say you decide, you know what, I want to be part of this Amazon delivery service. Because Amazon sets it up that, hey, if you want to sign up and you got some time and you got a car and you want to pick up a package and take it from point A to point B, we'll pay you for your troubles and you get the money. It's very simple. You're not really an employee of ours, right? We're sort of allowing you.
That's what they say, yes.
Right. We're not employed because you're employing yourself. We're putting it out there and you determine, hey, I'll do that for a couple of bucks. So off you go. Now, the stranger has a story, and I see the UK actually is thinking about this as a law.
That's right. Oh, this is, I mean, the gig economy is forcing us to, you know, sort of recalibrate our values in terms of labor. Mm-hmm. And right now, there's just an investigation going on from the Seattle Office of Labor Standards to see whether Amazon Flex should be considered part of the minimum wage law.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they say, and this is the same thing with with Uber, they've been sued in various places for the way they treat their employees.
Yeah.
Are they covered by labor laws or not?
Mm-hmm.
And if you allow them to be seen as independent contractors, they're not covered. The one thing about the Amazon Flex, the reason the argument in favor of them being seen as employees, this is the case that's being made in there, is that, because I didn't realize how this operated. What you do is, unlike with Uber, say, or Lyft, you sign up for shifts.
Yeah.
And you are responsible for those shifts.
Mm-hmm.
So you sit, you get your cars, you sit in your car and you sign up for a 4-hour shift from noon to four.
Mm-hmm.
You do not have control of your time. You're responsible for responding to the company, and the company assigns you packages to pick up and to deliver.
Yeah, okay.
So you say, so that is more of a reach into the system, into the employee's life, than it would be if you said, hey, we've got, who wants to come pick up this package in Bothell and take it to Redmond?
Right.
And because of that, they say that's actually closer to an employer-employee relationship. That's the argument that's being made, at least. And so they're looking at it to see if they think it would fit.
So in the UK, what they would say is, you will receive, if you sign up for a shift, they will tell you what your average hourly rate would be in shift.
Okay.
So then you're able to make the decision, okay, do I want the shift?
Yes.
If I'm only going to make X, then you know what? It's not worth it for me. Because you need that additional piece of information as opposed to just sort of sitting there and then maybe making nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. So anyway, that's under investigation right now, and we'll have to see.
But certainly not minimum wage, because the difference, it's like you go to one of these farm places and you get paid by the pound. How many apples you can pick in a pound? An hour. There you go. We'll pay you an hourly rate depending upon the pounds, right? So you pick a lot and work really hard, you make more money. If somebody were sitting in their car and getting paid minimum wage, how many pickups and deliveries would they make in order to satisfy now the employer, Amazon?
That's a good question, because I don't know. What did they get? Did they get paid per pickup? Did they get paid the distance, or they get paid how the value of the merchandise that they're, I don't know how they
determine. I think it's a series of all of those that add up to what you're getting paid, because you couldn't just drive from here to, say, Nebraska.
Maybe. There are taxi stories where a guy pays you to drive through states.
Well, here's the thing. If the person decides, you know what, I don't want a regular job. I'd rather have this. This works for me. It's a couple of hours every single day, and it works out for me. Don't start to now make me be beholden to an employer.
Well, yeah, the thing is, I mean, if that's the case, then you could have there'd be no need for labor laws, because everybody's working at the whim of the employer. And we as a society said there should be certain minimums, that's all.
Right. And these people could always get a different job somewhere else. There's tons of jobs available.
That's right. But, I mean, should we allow an employer to take advantage of people who may sit in their car for 4 hours and not get paid a dime?
How are they taking advantage of somebody that's freely determining to be in their car?
Because the expectation is that they would get that business.
Oh, see, right, that's it. So I think the UK has a solution, which is the expectation is there will be business.
Yes.
Okay, fine. I worked in restaurants, and it was slow that day. They'd say, hey, who wants to go home?
Right.
Because you realize, I'm not going to make any money hanging out here. I'd rather go out and, you know, steal something and sell it at a pawn shop. Just like hypothetical.
Like the silverware at the restaurant that you're no longer working at.
Now, are they going to miss a couple forks? I ask you. Huh? Couple forks. And nobody ever uses a soup spoon or the dessert spoon or fork. Okay.
Or that tureen.
Boy, those tureens are hard to get rid of. Yeah. I'll tell you, I had that thing clunking around in the back seat of the car for days. All right. The CIA, as Hess said, and the officials that have worked in the CIA said, we should have never been in the business of interrogation. That should not have been falling upon us. But, of course, we panicked right after 9/11. Mm-hmm. And then when we were gathering up suspects, the CIA went to off sites, black sites. And that's where they did some aggressive interrogation. And it was later on determined to be
pretty almost awful.
Close to torture.
Yes.
And
close.
We were able to write laws to make it seem like we weren't torturing them.
Yes.
Okay. And the CIA was following, you know, the letter of the law or whatever. It's not law, but the letter of what was coming down from the Bush administration regarding aggressive interrogation techniques.
Right. Justifications written by the under the auspices of Dick Cheney that now are seen as, I mean, you know, unnecessary rectal feeding, really. I mean, it's like the waterboarding. I mean, it's just. It is. It's pretty outrageous what we did.
Yeah.
And now we have somebody who oversaw some of that.
Right.
It's unclear because, again, you're in the CIA. You don't want to have everything become transparently obvious. But she did oversee a secret prison in Thailand. The reason they're in Thailand so they could do things that we might not have been able to get away with in the United States.
Uh-huh.
The thing is that we're now kind of appalled at what we allowed.
Right. But don't forget, we are the government.
Well, that's right. We are. And
we round up Japanese citizens. We are the government.
And the government corrects its mistakes. And so then the question is, if you were in charge of the Japanese internment program and would not, you know, say that that was wrong at the time, then it might be hard to get a Senate appointment here as the head of the CIA. That's the kind of moral issue that's being kicked around in the Senate right now.
Jeannie Haspel had an opportunity yesterday to sit down. She has been in the CIA for a long time.
33 years.
See, I've read a number of articles on her, both pro and con, but it seems everybody does agree with the fact that she is a really good spy and a really good government employee. And she was following the orders that was what was told that she was supposed to do, so they wanted to grill her on this one.
CIA does not do interrogations. We historically have not done interrogations, and we don't do interrogations today.
Yeah, there we go. Don't do them today.
But we did.
We did. We panicked, right?
Yes.
Somebody has to round these terrorists up. Maine Senator asks Gina if she'd waterboard if Donald Trump asked. Oh, gosh.
The president gave you a direct order to waterboard.
Is that Susan Collins?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Board.
What are you so dismissive for?
No, it just says here it's Maine Senator, and I recognize
Susan Collins.
That suspect, what would you do?
Senator, I would advise, I do not believe the president would ask me to do that.
Period? That's it?
That's all I got.
That's not the right answer. This is the whole Nuremberg thing.
No, no, no. You know, she's right. But she's asked. So first of all, does the president of the United States, let's take Trump out of it. Let's say it was Hillary, because Hillary's a big hawk, too. Let's take Hillary, and let's say Hillary turns and says, hey, waterboard that guy.
Yes. I would hope she'd say, no, ma'am, Madam President.
Yes. I can't do it. I'm going to quit.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is that, but that's an interesting response. Well, I don't think he would ask me that. That's not the answer, because right now she says that I'll stop talking.
That's all I got on that. Clips? But listen, Susan Collins, I assume any good interrogator has the answer that they want, right? They know what you're going to say, and they're forcing you to say something. She's expecting a certain response. She didn't give it to her, which should have been absolutely not. I don't believe in torture. The United States doesn't stand by torture.
Yes.
I can't imagine the President of the United States asking me to violate the Constitution.
Yes.
That would be your answer. Kamala Harris asked about the big question, is torture immoral?
Oh, okay. Great.
Sometimes this show is considered a form of torture.
One question I've not heard.
Always immoral.
Hold on, Tom. Kamala Harris is speaking.
One question I've not heard you answer is, do you believe that the previous interrogation techniques were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA officers to whom you referred.
It's a yes or no answer. Do you believe the previous interrogation techniques were immoral? I'm not asking, do you believe they were legal? I'm asking, do you believe they were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA did extraordinary work to prevent another attack on this country, given the legal tools that we were authorized
to use. Please answer yes or no. Do you believe in hindsight that those techniques were immoral?
Senator, what I believe sitting here today is that I support the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to.
Can you please answer the question?
Senator, hang on.
This is excellent.
I think I've answered the question.
No, you've not. Do you believe the previous techniques, now armed with hindsight, do you believe they were immoral? Yes or no?
Senator, I believe that we should hold ourselves to the moral standard outlined in the Army Field Manual.
There you go.
Yeah, those are great questions. And the thing is, they're impossible answers, but that's what makes them great questions. Because they question one question
over and over again.
Yeah, right? But I mean, that particular issue, because that's the thing that we all as a country are grappling with, too. The idea of, is torture ever defensible? If torture is defensible, if you could save six kids by torturing this one person,
right,
could you do it or not? It raises this great philosophical question. And the danger about Gina Haspel, as a solid CIA agent as she has been, is would it be like, okay, the defense in the Nuremberg trials, the defense the German officers often gave is, you know, I was just following orders. Is that enough of a justification for doing what you're doing, or do you have some kind of personal agency in deciding whether to enforce it or not?
So it's the ticking time bomb problem, which is if you knew, so you got the person sitting there, Tom, and there's a bomb ticking, and within 5 minutes it's going to go off and kill a million people.
Yeah.
And you know that you're pretty sure you can get the information from the guy. And you're going to torture the one.
See, that's crucial to know whether you're going to get it or not, because that's one of the follow-up questions is, did it work? Did those interrogations work? And she said, no, they did not work, but we did get some useful information. So there she was pressed on that as well. But yeah, I think these are great ethical issues that, you know, we need to think about.
Yeah, and it is the question of the one guy having pain inflicted upon him for a period of time,
and
not to kill him necessarily, but just like to cause him some pain so that he then gives the information, so then you save everybody from the ticking time bomb.
Yes. I think it's the same. It's a philosophy 101, too. If you could kill one innocent person to save a million, would you do it or not? And philosophically, they say, no, you shouldn't. Get it, because it's not fair to that one person. But the cost of that
because the one person's life is invaluable?
Yeah, well,
so then the other person's, a million lives are also invaluable.
Yes, but you are acting to kill one life instead of saving a million. But it's a great philosophical question you could kick around.
Think amount of footwork it would take to save a million. That's a lot of effort. You got the one guy right here.
It's good.
It's a lot easier.
Ideally, the solution is that person takes it upon himself to kill himself.
Kill himself, right.
To save a million.
Talk him into it. Or you could just talk him to death. That's what you could do.
You'd
ask one of your five-part questions. The guy'd be like, all right! Open the window! Be right back. Tom and Curly right here on Cairo Radio. Here we go. Write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. Somebody gets to be letter of the day. Two quick stories to take care of before we say goodbye to the 11:30 hour. Here, the South Florida woman, Tom, who was denied a chance to renew her apartment lease agreement after she refused to give her landlord what, Tom?
An ultrasound.
That's right. The landlord wanted an ultrasound to make sure that she was or was not pregnant.
No, not quite. I think that he says that she was, I think, 5 months pregnant or something at the time.
Yes.
And he refused to renew her lease because he says she didn't tell him that she was pregnant.
Yeah.
And or did not provide him with an ultrasound to establish that she was pregnant,
right,
and that is seen as grounds for him not to give up the lease. Now she thinks it's rather odd that you need to provide an ultrasound. She's not quite sure why that would be the case, but she said she was 5 months pregnant. I mean, it was clear to everybody she thought that she was pregnant, and it was a little suspicious. So she has filed a lawsuit against the owner of the privately owned affordable housing complex for that, because she claims that that was not it. She wasn't indicated that was indeed required, and she doesn't understand why it should be required. Now, she is being supported by an organization called Housing Opportunities Project for Excellence, mm-hmm. standing for hope. And they've joined her in this suit. It's a not-for-profit corporation that's fighting housing discrimination. And they say that they went ahead and tested whether this is true or not. And they sent in an Hispanic woman and an African-American woman. And the African-American woman was given a list of reasons for denial of a tenancy, like having it asked her about a history of foreclosures, short sales, or evictions. Mm-hmm. And they didn't ask the Hispanic woman.
Oh.
So they've established that there seems to be some kind of racial unfairness going on here. They also they sent the African American woman, again, this is just the tester, this is the real woman, to see if she could apply at this place that they told her if she needed to establish a pregnancy. And they said yes, that she had to provide a doctor's note verifying pregnancy, mm-hmm. and an ultrasound picture. So this clearly is something that's happening to a number of people that are applying here.
Yeah.
And is it just being given to African-American women as opposed to other women?
And I assume the reason that they'd want to know if you're pregnant or not is because she already has three kids. She's a single mom. She's now pregnant with her fourth. I think they want to be able to, when they fill out the paperwork, how many people are living in the apartment.
Yeah, but I mean, it doesn't, there's no, at this point, there's no justification for this. Whether that's the case or not, whether
yeah.
you're pregnant or not, should you have to provide an ultrasound picture? I'm not even sure what the value of that is if you say you're pregnant or you're not pregnant. But at this point, all we know is the lawsuit. We have not heard from the Sorrento rental community, which is the one that denied her. And so this is now being adjudicated.
There is a zoo in Canada, up there in Canada, where Alberta, Canada. And this is an example of why you have to have people that follow the rules in charge. I was talking earlier, just a couple minutes ago, about Patrick not being here. He's
right.
He's no longer the producer of the Great Tom and Curley Show. He's gone on to become a Seattle police officer. And I was saying that he was a rule follower.
Mm-hmm.
And certain people are rule followers. I don't necessarily care about the rules.
No.
But it would seem like the people in Alberta, Canada, who run this zoo should have somebody that's in charge that would be able to go, hey, before you do that, just want to show you here on this piece of paper that, you might not want to do that.
Guess what? This was the owner of that zoo that did this.
Now, somebody needs to be above the zoo owner then.
He thought this was very cute and clever, and it did make for a great little video. He decided to go through a drive-thru, a Dairy Queen drive-thru, mm-hmm. and he had his bear sitting in the front seat along with him, Berkeley, the Kodiak bear, who leans out the window,
mm-hmm.
and again, this is all planned.
Bites the face off of the Dairy Queen owner.
The Dairy Queen owner.
Oh, huh?
Is holding an ice cream cone and holds it out, and the bear licks the cone.
It's so cute.
John, it's so cute.
Well, then Tom, then the Dairy Queen owner then takes a spoon and puts it in the ice cream and then is feeding the one-year-old Kodiak bear with the spoon.
Now, the zoo is so proud of this. They said, oh, my God, everyone's going to line up and come to see Barkley, the Kodiak bear at our zoo. I'm going to post this.
Right. And let's make it educational so we can talk about a bear. So this is the voiceover. So you're watching the video and
Beautiful.
You're hearing this.
So Mark, if we were to throw an ice cream out of our window driving down the highway, do you have any idea how far a bear could actually smell that from?
I have no idea.
Bears can smell 20 miles upwind.
Wow. So Serena, what about when I see a bear on the side of the road and all those people stop and try and take her picture and get out of the car?
Well, Mark, if bears can smell 20 miles upwind, do you think that they're going to be able to smell all those amazing smells coming out of those vehicles?
Yeah. Maybe we should stay inside the vehicle and keep our double cheeseburger inside, too.
Wait, Mark sounds like a real idiot, doesn't he? Huh?
Mark Boss is his name. He was talking to Debbie Rowland. So,
you watch the bear eating the ice cream, and this is what they have underneath it.
Right. Well, they are. They want to, that's what the zoos have a mission. In addition to showing the animals, they want to teach about the animals. Anyway, the great thing is that they posted it themselves. And because of that, the law, the man, mm-hmm. the Canadian man,
sure,
came
the
down on
yeah, yeah.
them. And they are planning to plead guilty. they didn't realize or they had forgotten that there's this Wildlife Act. At any time that you, if you have a zoo or have an animal, a wild animal, you have to inform the authorities, and you can't put them out in public and all this kind of stuff. And so they were, they said, oh, yeah, we made these two mistakes. Apparently they.
Yeah, listen, we made a mistake. That's not a mistake. A mistake is like, hey, what's 4 plus 5? Oh, it's 8. Oh, no, it's 9. Oh, I'm off on 1. It's not a mistake. It's a mistake we put the bear in the front of the car. It's a mistake that we rolled down the window. It's a mistake we let the bear eat ice cream.
The mistake here, no, I think they actually have a legitimate use of that word, which is that they were supposed to inform the wildlife, whatever their department in Canada is, that they were going to do this. Now, keep in mind, we didn't know this until the end of the story. The Dairy Queen was not open for business. They made a special thing. It's like doing a shooting a commercial. We're going to open up the Dairy Queen early. We're going to have the owner, not just some 16-year-old unknowing girl, do this. It's all sort of planned out. My hunch is maybe they would have gotten permission to do this if they had just informed the authorities. Instead, they figured, oh, what the heck, and they tried it, and now they got caught, and now they're going to plead guilty in a Canadian court of law.
Yeah. Rye was telling me yesterday that a new prank, and I said, I don't think this falls into the category of prank, what people are doing now at McDonald's. They go up, they pay at the one window, you order at the one place, you pull up the next window, you pay at that window, then they hand you a smoothie, a big, large smoothie or something. And when the person opens the window to give you the smoothie, you take it and then throw it back in the window at them. That doesn't seem like a prank, does it?
No, that's what that
just mean.
That's what happened to that 91-year-old, with the fire shelter.
I know.
Through the
I know, but this
smoothie.
Really is terrible. People, he goes, and he goes, somebody thought they were funny. They did it three times.
Really? Yeah.
So the guy's in there cleaning up the one smoothie.
Yeah.
Guy pulls up the window, orders smoothie, and then throws it back in the window.
Yeah, because those fast food deliverers, they're horrible people. They really need to be picked on.
God, oh, it's so awful.
I know it's awful. That's what I mean.
Terrible.
Yeah, terrible. Rye. I hope you don't
consort
with any of them.
That's what I say. Watch out who you're hanging around with. All right, come back. Your letters are still pouring in. We do appreciate it. And one of you gets a chance to be letter of the day as Andrew filters through the letters. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. If you think Tom said anything outrageous or even thought something, didn't even have to express it. If you're like, I think Tom was going to say this, take him to task. That's how he does all of his learning. We'll be right back. All righty. Who's this?
Herbie Hancock.
Okay. An interesting story about Charlie Yardberg Parker. Did you hear the story that he used to go and steal like a saxophone, play it for the evening, and then hawk it for money for heroin?
Charlie Parker?
Yeah.
Yeah, he had a tough life.
He had a tough life. Yeah. Incredible musician. Maybe, next time we'll bump him a little Charlie Yardberg. Yardberg. All right. Hey, by the way, Doug's Linwood Mazda is proud to bring you the mailbag. In fact, the entire mail is presented by a Doug's Linwood Mazda because they've given our mailman an opportunity to drive around in a Mazda, and he comes to us now singing a song, driving a beautiful Mazda from Doug's Linwood Mazda. Mailman! So happy he is in his car. Look at him.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman.
Bopping down the road.
I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Yes. Thank you, mailman. Teeny tiny lady, how are you over there? Hello.
Hello.
Hello to you, too. She's going to tell us about the letter of the day, Tom, but let's get started now.
Okay, we start off did the Seattle musician story, mm-hmm. how tough it is for a musician. It's always kind of a tenuous life anyway to make a go of it in this expensive city called Seattle. 206 weighs in. As a local musician, it was really special to hear John weigh in on Seattle's music scene.
Thank you.
You're right, John.
Oh.
Who cares about culture, musicians, and our city's rich musical past? Let's tear down the few remaining venues and replace them with Botox and teeth whitening facilities.
Sean and
got
Arlington.
It.
Sean and, is this Sean and
got
Arlington?
It. That is funny.
Hold on.
No, he ends it with got it.
I know.
That's good.
Is this his music?
It is.
Tear down those venues. Put up some Botox and teeth whitening facilities. This is Sean in Arlington's music, by the way. He moved out of Seattle and into Arlington.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
And you say good riddance.
No, I don't say good riddance. I don't say good riddance.
I think that's what Sean thinks.
No. If there's more people that want Botox. What's a good job? Larry in West Seattle says, ex-producer of the Tom and Curly Show. Issaquah Pizza Chef on Thursdays, which, by the way, is Thursday.
Oh, my God. We dropped the ball.
Not yet. Okay. Curly's dentist. Cheeseburger cook at the White House, animal control officer for evil raccoons. All right, got it all that. All right.
Very good.
Mm-hmm.
We moving on?
Yes, move
okay.
on. Okay.
This is about the North Korean prisoner release.
Yeah.
Allison in Seattle takes me to task. Tom, Trump hogging the spotlight when the hostages landed made you like him? I can understand feeling sorry for him because he's so insecure, but like is a bit strong. Yeah, like is a bit strong. To me, it made him human, but it made him human and vulnerable in a way that he would never want to be seen as.
Oh,
so it would be an insult for me to then say, I like you, but it was because of that.
We have another letter. Yeah. We'll get to it in a minute, but there's a woman in the back with a question. Yes.
Is my pizza going to be covered in cocaine today?
Yes. It is Thursday.
What was that again?
That was... Yes!
Okay, there we go. I hope that answers your question. Amazon intimidation of city council. Brandon Kirkland says, subprime mob boss is a poor attempt to play on words with Amazon Prime.
Oh.
Oh, okay.
Probably not that clever.
Not at all.
On the vacation packages of peasants in the Middle Ages. Marcia in Port Orchard. Sure, the peasants got a lot of time off. But did they get any pay during those 6 months of idle time?
No. How much money do you need to solve the homelessness, and should the cash come from Amazon? Andrew, 206. Can we get a sounder for homeless stories as we used to have for the minimum wage stories? Yes, we can. In fact,
yeah,
didn't
we'll
I come up
on
with
that.
One and then people said it was disrespectful?
Probably.
Okay, we'll have one.
We'll next. Get right on that.
Yes.
425. John, yeah. I love you, man,
yeah,
but please stop suggesting that all homeless people have a drug problem. My boyfriend and I are homeless, and neither one of us has ever done drugs. We both work. We just have a really tough financial situations due to divorce. Not all homeless people are on drugs.
I'm sorry, 425, if you think I use the word all. I will not use the word all. Many. And you'll give me that.
Okay.
Nicholas in Seattle says, you claim that spending money to help the homeless only increases their numbers, so we should stop funding programs that are meant to help the homeless. Not what I said. I'm curious.
Sort of.
No, I didn't say you should stop them, Tom.
Well,
don't stop the programs. I'm just saying is that if you give more, you get more.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious. If this logic applies to non-government agencies that work to help the homeless, shouldn't they be forced to stop helping those in need if their efforts only increase homeless population and adversely affect our community? Or is it only government spending that increases the number of homeless in your mind?
Very good
point.
Very good, Nicholas. 360. The city council is going after about getting more money for affordable housing for the homeless. All wrong. If the city of Seattle really wanted to raise more cash and raise it from Amazon, they should invest in Amazon stock like I did.
Mm-hmm.
They'd be very happy and could swell their coffers with a lot more Bezos bucks than through some piddling little head tax.
Yeah.
My shares are up 124% in 2 years.
Nicholas,
no capitalism.
Nicholas, just back to you for 1 minute. Non-government agencies receive their money from donations from individuals that freely give the donations if they feel that the organization is doing a good job. And that's the difference.
Yeah,
but
his point is they still might be attracted if you have really good nonprofits that are charity-based. Then people say, hey, come to Seattle for that.
I know multiple people who have chosen to live in Washington side as opposed to Oregon side specifically because Washington does not have a state income tax. Corporations will do the same thing. A dollar is a dollar. John, you got this one right. Okay, one right.
Yeah.
3 hours a month. I get one right.
And now it is
better than some days.
True, thanks.
And it's from Eric.
Oh, good.
In Bothell.
Once made famous by this very show.
John and Tom.
Yes.
I miss Patrick.
Oh,
he sent me a nice email at the end of yesterday's show.
Wow.
I hope you guys realize what a gem you had in Patrick. I particularly like that you made it a point to celebrate Patrick's employment. He deserved it. There's an odd relationship between any show and that show's audience. A show like yours becomes a part of the listener's life. The people that are a part of the show are not unlike extended family, which is similar to the group you work with when you are employed. It was nice to know what Patrick will be doing. Thanks for making his parting a part of the show.
Out of time. Bye-bye.